this is TJ Amos with the Asheville FM NewsHour. I'm here with Todd Williams, the Buncombe County District Attorney.
Hey, I really appreciate it, TJ.
Sure. We just wanted to get together and find out like what's going on with you and seeing what you can share with our listeners.
Totally. I really appreciate the opportunity. So I guess what I find people are most interested in is, number one, there's a lot of confusion about what the district attorney and the district attorney's office does. There's also confusion about why somebody wants to be a DA and be a district attorney. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what led me to this job, too. So I think it helps people to know a little bit about me and a little bit about the job, kind of personalize a little bit.
Sounds
and then
good.
Then talk about the technical aspects of it. I feel like I've said this hundreds and thousands of times, and it's just getting kind of boring. Because again, it's me, and you know, I know precisely how boring I am, right?
Well, but we've got new listeners sometimes.
Right,
so.
Right. So new listeners, maybe this will be interesting information. But mm-hmm. I was a public defender for years and years and years, and a capital defender. And the capital defender focuses just on homicide defense. But before that, even why? Why be a public defender? Maybe people want to answer that. Why were you interested in a public defender, a capital defender? Well, before that, you go to law school, you go to class, and then you want to know how it really works. So you go out and you do an internship, and you make contact with lawyers who are doing things. And I had, you know, you had options. You could send out letters. You could seek an internship with, you know, a big law firm that does, you know, corporate defense or tax law or something like that. And there are plenty of law students that are interested in that kind of work. Or you could go another direction. Well, I sent my resume out to, I can't remember all the resumes I sent out, but I got selected to do an internship with the Southern Center for Human Rights in Atlanta, a law firm that was led by Steve Bright. He retired a couple years ago. Hmm. And it's a death penalty and prisoner rights law firm.
Oh, interesting. Okay?
So they did death penalty defense, and they did prisoner rights litigation in Georgia and Alabama. Public defenders, folks who have been engaged in the justice system, lawyers in general, have known that there are disparate impacts and there are problems with justice and race and economics and, you know, social status and ethnicity and national origin, mm-hmm. and you know, sexual orientation, all these things. They're always at play when we're trying to do justice. But way back in 1997, I was an intern with the Southern Center for Human Rights, and the Georgia state flag, incorporated in the Georgia state flag, was the Confederate Stars and Bars back then. Steve Bright litigated the removal of the Georgia state flag from the courtroom in a case where there was an African-American defendant because of the bias that placed within the courtroom,
sure.
in terms of, you know, fundamental fairness and justice. So I want to throw that out as this is a biographical detail, you know, about me that maybe people don't know, is that my first internship when I was in law school was to do this kind of work,
mm-hmm.
okay? And then I was a public defender for 12 years, capital defender in addition to that. And, you know, back in 2014, we saw that folks had been convicted here in Buncombe County, and the Innocence Commission had come up here and overturned their convictions. I ran on that. I ran on providing redress for other folks who were wrongfully convicted. And, you know, we've rectified a number of things. We've taken two folks off death row. We've processed all kinds of post-conviction matters in the last 4 years to move justice on the right path here in Buncombe County and to make amends for some of the overzealous prosecutorial philosophies of the past,
mm-hmm.
that have really called into question, you know, the credibility of our justice system. And I think a lot of folks in our community are concerned about that. So I want to share that's my biographical perspective, and that's what informs many of my philosophies. Now, I did run to be the district attorney, and the district attorney I'm one of 44 in the state of North Carolina. There are 100 counties. So in some districts, the district attorney might be a district attorney for more than one county.
Mm.
But here in Buncombe County, our district is just Buncombe County. I'm the district attorney for the county, therefore, and all municipalities within it. That means if APD charges a crime, if the sheriff's office charges a crime, or Black Mountain Police Department charges a crime,
mm-hmm.
it comes into the court system, and the district attorney's office is obligated to prosecute it, whether it be a misdemeanor, a traffic citation, or murder, and everything, you know, in between.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is initiated once that charge is filed. We don't have an investigatorial function. We're not investigators, although we do have investigators on staff. We have two investigators on staff.
Mm-hmm.
Those investigators are there for litigation support after the charge is filed. If you were charged with something, we had questions about the charge, or we needed additional evidence to support the charge, then our investigators could go out.
Okay.
So I really want to clear that up for people, because people think that sometimes that the DA and the police and the sheriff are all on the same, we are on the same side, but we're not necessarily coordinated in the same way that we're team players. And, you know, there's one boss of everybody. That's
so
not the case.
You can't initiate a charge, but you can decide if a charge is moved forward through the court system?
We can't investigate for the purpose of charging, but once a charge
is
filed, then we can, then to support the charge, we can either ask law enforcement to go out and supplement their investigation, or our investigators can sometimes provide that those last little pieces, dotting I's and crossing T's, to ensure we have the most complete case possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you use the term initiate. Yes, we can initiate a charge, but that's a request to, like, the State Bureau of Investigation or another law enforcement agency to investigate what has been either reported to us or we suspect is likely a violation of the law. So we can request the investigation, which you could say is initiating it, but that's the limit of it. The Supreme Court has said that the DA's role is, this is a really weird word, and it's rooted in the term advocacy, but the DA's role is, I don't even know how to pronounce it precisely, it's advocative, advocacy, advocative. Our role is to advocate. We are advocates, and that's generally what lawyers are. They're advocates.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not doing advocacy, we're not doing our job. If we're doing investigation, in a matter that is not charged, that is not permitted. The other thing that, that people constantly have concerns about and questions about is district attorney discretion. And We the district attorney's office probably has more ability to act in an executive fashion than any other actor in the court system, because we create the dockets and we create the calendars, and we, you know, we have the discretion to, you know, on a first degree murder charge, if the evidence doesn't support the charge, and, you know, we learn facts that indicate that the wrong person is charged or whatever. Well, we are not, because simply because a magistrate judge signed a warrant, we're not obligated to take it to a jury. We can dismiss it. We can do, our obligation is to do justice in each and every case.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's where our discretion emanates from. We have a saying in the office that a case is never better than the very day that it's charged. Because sometimes after a case is charged, you learn new facts and circumstances. It could be about the crime itself, very frequently. And actually, the case that's in my mind is the case that we prosecuted this week. It was a terrible, terrible, tragic homicide involving a real estate agent by the name of Christina Louise Kessinger. She was 61 or two at her passing, but she was abducted and a screwdriver was forced into her skull. Absolutely
terrible,
heinous. And we did seek an aggravating factor of heinous, atrocious, and cruel, and she was placed in a dumpster. The case was charged first degree and it pled second degree, and, you know, a lot of folks are like, well why? Well, again, the case was charged first degree because probable cause indicated that, you know, the suspect stole her car and murdered the victim.
Mm-hmm.
So that's robbery with a dangerous weapon together with a homicide. That gets us felony murder. It takes out premeditation, deliberation, all those elements. and it makes it a first degree case. However, in the intervening 2 to 3 years, court-appointed lawyers is put on the case. They do their vetting of the case. They look deeply into not only the facts and circumstances of the case, but the client. And medical records showed that this Mr. Norton, was his name, had got his first mental health diagnosis at age 2. Okay, and he had been in and out, and he was involuntarily committed within 5 days of the homicide. My staff and I have never seen a psychiatric report come from the state. The state's expert that actually said that Mr. Norton was not guilty by reason of insanity. This is where we can go ahead and we can say, okay, we're going to disregard all this information about mental health. A life that's clearly not malingering. This is not someone who's trying to
escape
and save himself by confabulating things. Mm-hmm. Saying, oh, I'm hallucinating something now. I'm sorry, I can't pay attention to the conversation. Clearly not the situation. We can ignore it and we could go to trial and we can roll the dice. Or the defense lawyer signaled to us that he was actually not willing to go the not guilty by reason of insanity route, and that he wanted to take responsibility for what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And however crazy he might be, and that's not a medical term, but however disabled mm-hmm. he might be, perhaps there was something in him that was human. And I think that very well indicates that, right? So the prosecutor's duty is to do justice. Part of that is also to consult with the victim's family. And we certainly did that in this case. And we spoke with a woman that spoke in court yesterday, the sister of the deceased victim. And she was very appreciative that she understood the nature of the crime. She understood why. The facts led us to consider the acceptance of a second degree 45 to 56 year sentence plea.
Okay.
And she thanked us and she was very grateful. She had to fly in from out of state, said what she did in court. So, you know, while there is always going to be this Monday morning quarterbacking in my, mm-hmm. in my role, and we're quite inured to it and used to it, our job is to do justice. And, you know, a lot of these decisions are made, you know, we're talking to folks who have lost people in their lives. You know, if they stand up in court and they say, I'm good with it. We can't restore life. You know, we can't restore the family to where they were before this tragic. So it's a very difficult situation for us to be in. But if the family members are apprised and we feel like we're doing justice and protecting public safety, that's a job well done.
Okay, now speaking to that, now first I want to interject that you and I both know that in terms of mental health, it's not a high number of people with mental health issues that are perpetuating violence. So I don't want that to be a concern for people that because someone has a mental health diagnosis that they're going to be a violent person. And I know that's an example you gave. But using that example, with the plea deal that you gave, how does that play out in terms of the actual sentence served? And then once the sentence is served, what happens afterwards to help that person in that situation so that they don't reoffend or people are not at risk? So how do you not only work with the families to see, do they feel like justice was met for their loved one, but for also for the public to feel like they are safe from potential future harm that could be caused by somebody who's committed a crime? And just using that example in this instance.
Well, in this instance, the example doesn't really hold very well because he's going to serve a 45 to 56 year sentence, and that's going to be tantamount to life.
For him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, if in not guilty by reason of insanity is extremely rare, as I indicated, I don't think there's been a not guilty by reason of insanity verdict here in North Carolina in 20 years.
Right.
I'm talking about statewide, not just Buncombe County.
Mm-hmm.
If that were to come to pass, there would have been a series of civil commitments for that individual after adjudication. In regard to this case, the Norton case that I'm talking about, he's serving 45 to 56 years and he'll be in his 70s or 80s if he's ever passes through the doors and heads back out into public life, which, like I say, is unlikely. But what I think maybe is a broader concern is We understand here in the DA's office and in the justice system that there is ever less tolerance in our community for housing people with mental health issues in jails and prisons.
Yes.
And this has been a big thrust of mine for the last 4 years, which is the Create Diversion Program, so we're not just asking people to plead guilty so they can get treatment. I mean, to me, that's ridiculous. And, you know, one of the things that law enforcement for hundreds of years now, since you know, they came up with the idea of a constabulatorium or whatever back in medieval England, and the sheriff, has been arresting people. You arrest and take to jail. Well, there have been some progressive jurisdictions in the country that have started to do something new called law enforcement assisted diversion. And I've really been trying to push here in Asheville for law enforcement. It's not my call, again, because we've already had this discussion, this conversation.
Right.
I can't boss, you know, law enforcement around. I'm trying to create an environment where they know that it's safe to explore this. And mm-hmm. I've really been holding a lot of conversations and bringing people in so that so they know that there are therapists and treatment providers in the community that are ready and willing to assist people in need, as opposed to just parking them in jail and wait for the court date.
Mm-hmm.
I keep hearing that law enforcement's receptive to it, but I'm not really, I don't really see a whole lot of proactivity on this. But my idea is, why don't we put a case manager, somebody like the person from the MSW, who can say, well, there are services for this person, and we probably would have better outcomes. Because what happens is, say somebody is caught with heroin, has fentanyl in it or whatever, it's very deadly, and law enforcement saves a life and brings them on down to Buncombe County Detention, and they've charged them with possession of a small amount of heroin. That person's a user, that person's an addict. They walk through those doors, they get the mugshot, they get booked, they get their bond. Someone's down there, they maybe they're even unsecured bond, they don't even have to make a bond, written promise, whatever. They get their court date, they leave, they're back out on the street. They know where they bought the heroin, the fentanyl, and they go back to that person, they get their next dose, and they don't live, they don't come back to their court date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we missed an opportunity. You know, that person could have come in, seen someone who could say, well, there's a peer support group that we can immediately orient. Do you want to get off this stuff? Do you want to be off this hamster wheel of addiction and mm-hmm. getting charged and then getting released and finding your next fix or whatever? And if the answer is yes, God, please help me. We're missing that opportunity, mm-hmm. you know? So that's something I'm really pushing on, because the justice system did not walk down Mount Sinai with Moses. It can be improved. That's my belief.
Right.
It can be, improved.
And it needs to be.
It needs to be. And that's on the front end. The other big thing that I'm really pushing on these days is I want to do more restorative justice, which is sometimes referred to as victim-offender dialogue or mediation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not going to happen in every case. It's not going to,
it's not always possible.
It is definitely not always possible. And I don't mean to imply that it would be in murder, rape, and robbery.
Right.
You know, it might be in very exceptional circumstances, but by and large, no. Only if the victim wants it.
Yes.
Because the core of restorative justice is identify and make the victim and the offender as whole as possible.
Mm-hmm.
When a case is submitted to the DA's office, we put together our case, we call our witnesses, we put it on in front of a jury. Sometimes the victim's not part of that. The victim sometimes does testify, but sometimes the victim can't testify. And the example that just popped in my mind would be like, say the drug-assisted sexual assault, mm-hmm. where the victim, you know, you have sane nurse examiners testifying for the victim instead of the victim, because the victim's not conscious, doesn't remember anything, doesn't mm-hmm. know. So the victim is sort of parked on the sidelines and then gets a result from the jury, guilty or not guilty. Some advocacy agencies call that the process of re-victimization. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And,
well, it's another instance where they feel helpless.
That's what I mean. They're sidelined. They're helpless. They don't have input. They're subject to decision-making made by others. That's an example. I'm not sure that would be pertinent in many prosecutions, but it's an example of where maybe a victim might be amenable to restorative justice to say, hey, why did you do this to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can imagine, especially in, you know, if it were a husband wife situation where, you know, or something, good Lord, what went through your mind? And, you know, it might not lead to marital harmony after that, but it
they would have
might
their voice.
Peace. So I would, we have someone in our community who's been trained on this, and I'm really constantly trying to think outside of the box and look for gaps. And all I see sometimes are gaps in our criminal justice system. But that's something that I've raised recently. There's a lot of reason to think that, you know, we are on the right path here in Buncombe County, because we recently got a $1.75 million grant from the Justice, it's called the Safety and Justice Challenge, from the MacArthur Foundation. We have put together a council called the Justice Resource Advisory Council. The council is made up of the DA, judges, public defender, law enforcement, well, pretrial release, other agencies, and we're beginning to have an ongoing and sustainable dialogue about how to improve the justice system. And I just think the fact that there's a dialogue is important. It's an adversarial system at heart. Mm-hmm. And it's a very easy for people to dig in and just say, well, I'm not listening to what the public defender has to say. I'm not listening to what the DA has to say. I'm not, you know, that judge always has that judge's opinions, and they're always wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, people find themselves in these positions. They don't want to talk to one another because it's an adversarial system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very good thing to have a format where people can talk about new ideas and hopefully make progress on them.
So
it's just small things like that are making a difference.
Right. So talking about new ideas, have you considered maybe having times where the public can come in and have a voice in how things go in terms of how justice is met in certain situations, seeing as how they potentially could be a victim in the future of some crime, or give you any kind of input as to how they have seen a particular case handled, or ask you questions about that? Would that process that you're looking at involve any of that at all, so that there's a community input as opposed to just the lawyers involved or the judges involved?
I have given thought to town halls, and Sheriff Miller just did one out in Candler. I told him that I think it would be great if he and I we're able to team up and coordinate a future one together. I've given thought to having one here in the courthouse, you know, like an open house type thing, and we could bring together some team members. But I constantly am circulating around. I think it might be good just to kind of throw open the doors and say, hey, we're the DA's office, come on in if you want, and just see what the response would be.
Mm-hmm.
Because generally I do go out in the community and I talk out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
We could do an update from traffic safety, we could do, you know, sex crimes, we could do child abuse prosecution. There's always ethical considerations, though, and it makes it sometimes... People come in, they want to know what's going on with pending cases.
Particular
we really
cases.
Can't,
yeah.
Pending cases or particular cases, and we can't always talk about those things.
Right.
In terms of openness and transparency, we have to always be mindful of those things, and that's frustrating for the public. I put a lot of statements and press releases out on Buncombe Co. DA, that's Buncombe CO for County.
And
DA.
I get emails from you with press releases, and I will share those on Facebook with different pages.
Great. Thank you. You know, and then I've got that kind of official Twitter page, which is, that's where you're going to find, you know, most of the news about convictions and
what is your official Twitter page?
What I just said, Buncombe Co. DA.
Oh, okay.
It's, you know, the at sign,
mm-hmm.
Buncombe Co. DA.
That's okay.
Buncombe
County. Yeah.
CODA. You can get a lot of information there. And then there's BuncombeDA.org, which is a website where there are a lot of links for you know, if you're charged with crime, you know, how to find out things. If you're a victim, how to find out things. And then I have my own Facebook page, and I have a campaign page with the biographical stuff and not a whole lot of stuff. I'm thinking about starting a blog on my campaign page, toddwilliamsforda.com.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, just maybe a quarterly little update, like a newsletter. You know, maybe that's more for my supporters, but who knows? I mean, maybe it'll be a general thing where I can publish it in both places.
Yeah, and some of the state representatives do that, where they will, if they're not out doing a town hall, they will actually just put something on Facebook to update something that's going on in the legislative process.
Right.
And people are always interested in that, even whether they're a supporter or not.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that it's something that is very difficult because I'm elected and people see this as political, but it is, and I certainly am elected, but there's a tension that's a little bit different in my job than from, say, Representative Turner or Ager or mm-hmm. Senator Van Dyne. They are purely advocating for legislation, political legislation, to garner political support for things, whereas, we are doing a very technical legal function within the court system that is akin to the role of a judge to a certain extent.
Well, it's and you're a judicial bound role. You're bound by the laws. You don't create the laws. You're bound by the laws that are there to.
Yeah, you're touching on something that is. It's an interesting issue because I think people are more and more frustrated with our political system,
mm-hmm.
and they see the DA as political. They look at what's going on. We get 51 or 52% of the votes for Republicans, and we end up with a supermajority in the legislature, right? 67% of the members of the North Carolina legislature are Republican. Maybe that's a little bit shy of that now because we've had some movement in the last election, but for 8 years, it was Democrats were shoved to the side and were powerless and voiceless, basically, down there. So people feel like the issue that I guess most talked about is the marijuana legalization right now,
mm-hmm.
right? And so people don't really understand why it's taking so long, why, what are the reasons, what's the rationale, is there any kind of basis for them to keep it in the status that it is? It's frustrating to me, too, because, they look, because the legislature's not doing what is maybe responsive to the popular will, they want someone else to do that. And that's a fine line, right? Like, we can use discretion in matters that are charged,
mm-hmm.
but think about speeding tickets, right? I may have a personal view about the speed limit on Merriman Avenue, right? But I'm not going to suddenly issue a press release and say, I'm not going to prosecute anyone for speeding less than 55 miles an hour on Merriman Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be a rather tense moment in time for me, yeah. I think. Do you follow what I'm saying? I think there people are frustrated with a lack of movement. You've got gerrymandered districts. You've got money in politics. You've got a legislature that is. Is certainly Buncombe County is the blue dot in the red sea of counties in Western North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The frustration level is high. I forget what your question though is really. I hope I'm still being responsive to it.
It was just a matter of how you were talking about in your role as a DA and how with the laws that you basically you have to follow the laws that are in place.
Yeah, and so the point is that basically I don't see myself as a super legislator, someone who can nullify the acts of the legislature, but we do strive to use our discretion in ways that are compassionate. We're not trying to, our goal is to do justice in each and every case, not to just seek convictions. We put these diversion programs in place so that folks can find another path out. And for petty crimes like marijuana, I mean, no one should leave the courthouse with a conviction for marijuana possession with our diversion programs and the eligibility associated with it, unless you really just want to pay your court costs and leave.
Mm. And are you able to advocate for changes in the law with things,
yes.
say, for example, like marijuana?
Yes. As a matter of fact, next week, the Conference of District Attorneys, all 44 of us are going to go down to the legislature. We're going to meet and we're going to advocate, not for really changes in specific parts of the law next Wednesday, but we are going down to show that we feel like we need new positions, we need additional resources with some more victims' rights obligations that were passed in a recent amendment to the Constitution with the raising of the age for juveniles. There's going to be more work to do on a number of different fronts. So our primary ask is that the legislature consider more positions for DAs across the state. I've been in contact with Representative Egger about legislation involving making it easier for folks to get expunctions, to get their convictions taken off the books. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think he and I agree that convictions, especially for minor nonviolent matters, don't need to follow someone for the rest of their lives and mm-hmm. taint their names. A myriad number of other things that I'm sure are going to be proposed by DAs to their representatives and go on down.
Nice.
And the DAs conference really has a lot of voice down there when all of us, all 44 of us, can really settle on, you know, this year the goal is one or two things, you know.
And we're running out of time for today, and I've really appreciated the time being here. I would love to have you for another conversation. One of the things that has come up recently that I've become more aware of is the effort to try to get rid of cash bail. And so maybe that's a conversation we can have in another conversation in a future interview.
Totally. I'd completely invite that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. So anything else you would like to say before we end for today?
No, not more than I really appreciate you, TJ, and I appreciate Asheville FM for the opportunity to talk. I was just on Political Alchemy on Tuesday, so I feel like Asheville FM listeners are going to be sick of me.
Well, I always think that the more information, the better. So people who don't listen to one show can listen to another.
Right.
And so, again, it's been nice to have you here, Todd. And Todd Williams is the Buncombe County DA. And this is TJ Amos with the Asheville FM NewsHour.